Offensive opportunities may be limited in dealing with the virtual enemy, but they are not impossible. They do require impeccable intelligence, however, and this has been difficult to get. Nevertheless, the changing nature of Al-Qaeda does not favor only the jihadists. As the group goes virtual and picks up converts to Islam and Muslims who have been long-term residents of Western countries, penetration may become easier. The more they look like us, the more we look like them. Human intelligence, humans, may become more easily available to intrepid moles from American agencies or from liaison services in Europe and the Middle East, as the jihadists expand their pool of operatives. The presence of John Walker Lind among the jihadists in Afghanistan, even though he was a mere foot soldier, and Richard Reed's role as a field operative, suggest intriguing possibilities for creative intelligence agencies. The U.S. should also consider targeted killing, to use the Israeli phrase, of jihadists known to be involved in conspiracies to attack the United States or obtain weapons of mass destruction. As a practical matter, the intelligence value of surveilling such a person usually outweighs the benefits of his death, assuming, of course, that U.S. or friendly intelligence services could be relied upon to keep him in sight or hearing. But this will not always be the case. From a legal standpoint, targeted killing under these conditions falls within the right to self-defense. A policy departure of this kind is unsavory and should be thoroughly debated. But in a new strategic context, in which jihadists are intent on mass casualties, unsavory may not be the same as unacceptable. The organizational and technological demands of defensive and offensive measures to counter the new terrorism will cost a great deal of money at a time of evaporating budget surplus, looming crises in social security and healthcare, and a ballooning defense budget. To complicate matters, the commitment of the Bush administration to missile defense will cost an estimated $238 billion over 25 years. This program will compete directly with as yet unknown funding requirements for homeland defense and the war on terrorism. A sustainable homeland defense and war on terrorism will depend on reliable funding that does not crowd out non-defense programs essential to America's quality of life. Other things being equal, the United States should have an effective defense against ballistic missile attack. The question is whether this is a more likely threat than jihadist use of weapons of mass destruction, delivered by plane, train, automobile, or the U.S. Postal Service. George Tenet doesn't think so. In January 2002, he released a new national intelligence estimate that U.S. territory was more likely to be attacked by ships, trucks, airplanes, or other means than by ballistic missiles. In the realm of missiles, he judged the threat from cruise missiles or unmanned aerial vehicles greater than that from ballistic missiles. The missile defense architecture currently under consideration offers no defense against these kinds of missile attacks. Americans are capable of self-sacrifice in wartime. However, the long intervals between jihadist attacks and the fact that attacks thwarted by security services will remain shrouded in secrecy will foster the impression that the war is over or in abeyance. When this happens, budgetary commitments to the war on terrorism and homeland defense will be vulnerable to dangerous cuts if they are squeezed between entitlement programs on one side and missile defense on the other. The best way to stave this off is to reorder commitments now in favor of the more urgent and likely threats to American security. Moreover, given the fiscal demands of a struggle against terror that could last for generations, the Congress should reconsider the future and most expensive phases of the Bush administration's massive tax cutting.